George Herbert Mahon.
George Herbert Mahon, professor of law, so he's Professor Booney. And he tried to retire, but they won't let him. He's teaching again. And he's going to talk to us about anticipatory search warrants. You've been doing this since what, mid-70s?
1977.
Okay. And he doesn't look a day older than he did back then, I guarantee you.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, I'm not Tom Bridges, but I am borrowing Professor Ramey's PowerPoint today. We're going to talk about anticipatory search warrants. As Gary said, I've been at this a long time. Is that a little loud? Let me. Is that okay? I have some great memories of teaching municipal court judges. Back in 1977, we had a municipal court judge seminar down in Junction, Texas, where Bear Bryant used to run all his football players up and down those hills. And we had a mock trial out there one evening. It was out under the oaks, and we used picnic benches as counsel tables. And one of my colleagues, Dan Benson, was the defense lawyer, and I was the prosecuting attorney. And he kept trying to stand up to object, but he couldn't get his legs untangled from the picnic benches. And I think it may have had something to do with maybe that Tech tea that was being drunk that night under those oaks, perhaps. But anyway, in that same seminar, one of my other colleagues told some little judge, I think it was from Mark, Texas, that since he was a mayor, he couldn't be a municipal court judge. He was unconstitutional. So we had to spend the rest of that seminar trying to satisfy this judge that it was okay, even though he was called an unconstitutional judge by my colleague. And then one final story. One day, we were teaching about drawing, requiring bail when a person requests a jury trial. And I made the statement that, well, I think that probably is unconstitutional because we are, in effect, chilling a person's right to request a jury trial, because you're actually punishing them by requiring them to make a bond when you don't require them to make a bond if they don't request a jury trial. Well, I knew I was in trouble because in the back of the room I see this hand waving, and they say, professor. And, of course, when they say professor, you know what that means. That means you really don't know the way it is in the real world. I'm going to tell you the way it is in the real world. And he says, let me tell you, professor, how we handle that problem out in our little old town. We just tell them they can't have a jury trial. So I've learned about as much, I've learned a lot teaching these classes, perhaps as much as I've taught. I'd like to make it informal, so if you have any questions, let's bring them up as we go along. And the topic is anticipatory search warrants. How many people in this room have issued a search warrant? Just about everybody. How many people in this room have issued an anticipatory search warrant? Got one. Some of you may wonder, what's that? Okay, and that's part of what we're talking about today is anticipatory search warrants. We're going to talk about those. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Fourth Amendment. We're going to talk about anticipatory warrants, probable cause, and the Texas law with respect to anticipatory warrants. Now, I'm going to skip through some of these things. What is an anticipatory search warrant? It is a warrant based upon an affidavit showing probable cause that at some future time, not presently, certain evidence, and I think you should add contraband or anything else that's subject to seizure under a warrant, of crime will be located at a specific place. And the reason we call it an anticipatory search warrant is probable cause doesn't exist right now. It's going to exist sometime in the future. Now, in what situations would anticipatory search warrant be issued? Well, as we're going to see in a minute, the Supreme Court considered a case, United States versus Grubbs, where there was a controlled delivery of a package of child porn. And what the feds wanted to do was they wanted to get into that house once that child porn was taken by the resident into the house. But the problem was there wasn't going to be probable cause until what? Until the porn was delivered. So that was the issue that the United States Supreme Court addressed then in United States versus Grubbs. Is that kind of a warrant is it constitutional under the Fourth Amendment? And in United States versus Grubbs, as I said, there was a controlled delivery of child porn in a sting operation operated by an undercover postal inspector. And the affidavit for the search warrant explained that the warrant would not be executed until the delivery of the child porn. The Supreme Court upheld the issuance of the warrant before the item was, let me go back to that, before the item to be seized was probably at the search situs. Now, as we all know, probable cause exists when there is a fair probability. Although it's interesting, some of you may remember the case Illinois versus Gates. Justice Rehnquist talked about a fair probability, and he talked about a substantial possibility. Does anybody know the difference between a fair probability and a substantial possibility? No, I don't know either. But we know one thing is that what? There has to be at least a reasonable cause to believe in a case of a search warrant. There has to be a reasonable cause to believe two things. One, that seizable items exist, that they exist, and they exist at what? A particular location. Those are the two things that you need probable cause of. The facts and circumstances that make it more likely than not. Tom says it's more likely than not that the contraband or other evidence will be found at a particular place. I disagree with that. I don't think it has to be more likely than not. It seems to me, what? There's a reasonable, more likely than not means what, Dwight? That's what, that's a preponderance of the evidence, isn't it? And I don't think a preponderance of the evidence is required. If I walked up to you and I made a face at you, you could reach several conclusions, could you? You could say, I had something bad to eat at lunch, or maybe I was mad at you, or maybe I had a bad night and my wife was angry at me. Now, all three conclusions, what? Might be reasonable. Now, is an appellate court going to say you were wrong to reach this conclusion as opposed to that conclusion? No, as long as what? That conclusion was reasonable. And the point is, when you're making the probable cause determination, you all know this, we're drawing inferences, aren't we, from facts. And we all can reach sometimes different conclusions from the same set of facts. But the Supreme Court has said, wait, we don't ask whether the magistrate necessarily was right, we just ask what? Whether the conclusion they reached was reasonable based on the facts. So it doesn't have to be more likely than not, it seems to me. It has to be what? Reasonable to believe that X items will be there at that location. In anticipatory warrants, however, the probable cause doesn't exist that the evidence will be there right now. It's what? Probable cause that it's going to be there later. Probable cause is based on a prediction that evidence will be found after a triggering condition. Of course, in Grubbs, what's the triggering condition? It's the delivery of that child porn to the house. That's the triggering condition. We don't have probable cause until that happens. Yes, sir? That's a good question because, you know, the problem in probable cause, as you all know as magistrates, that you want to make sure, for example, if you get information that there's X items in a house, if they're consumable, that means what? If they were there Thursday, they may not be there Sunday. Judge Cochran, I think, in a case one time said, "It's drugs are like barbecued ribs. They tend to be consumed, so you have to worry, don't you, about what time the information was received. But with anticipatory warrants, though, it's kind of interesting. There is no probable cause. There's not a staleness problem, is there? Because the event is what establishes probable cause. So you don't. It's not the same problem that you have with a regular search warrant. Now, I think it's been suggested that if you issue an anticipatory search warrant, that you do put a time fuse on it. Because I suppose over time you could argue that the probable cause evaporates, I suppose. But so it probably would be a good idea. But But typically, I don't know if you have to have a time limit necessarily. The Supreme Court didn't say you had to have a time limit because the triggering condition establishes the probable cause at that point. Okay? Does that make sense? Well, and my advice would be if you feel uncomfortable about it as a magistrate, you just put a time limit on it. You can do that. You can put a time limit on it. And it has been suggested by some that that's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. Now, the triggering condition would be the delivery. Now, for example, in Grubbs, the execution of the search warrant will not occur unless and until the parcel containing the child pornography has been received by a person and has been physically taken into the residence. Question, why do the feds want this kind of a warrant? But what do they want to, what do they want to, what do they want to, what do they want to search? The house. Now this is interesting, and I want to stop here and raise a point. Does the fact that child porn was delivered to a house and taken by the residents into the house, does that give probable cause to search the whole house? See, one of the things, because you all have issued warrants, for example, where if you're searching the house and it says, okay, search the house, all resident and all outbuildings and all the appurtenances there too and all of that, I think sometimes defense lawyers could make an argument that the scope of the warrant is broader than authorized by probable cause. Let me give you this example. If you've got an informant who says he saw the defendant smoking dope in his living room, does that give you probable cause to search the whole house? Why not, sir? The point is, what? If you got probable cause to believe there was dope, what? In the living room. But does that necessarily give you probable cause to believe that there's dope in the outbuildings?
May well be stored in the kitchen.
Does the amount of the drugs that the informant saw, is that a factor? It seems to me it is. For example, when you have searches of automobiles, the courts have held that, okay, if there's just, what, a recreational amount in the passenger compartment, that doesn't necessarily give you probable cause to believe what? It's in the trunk. But if there's a bunch in the passenger compartment, then what? You can infer, well, there's probably what? Some in the trunk too. So arguably there's a scope problem, it seems to me, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, these anticipatory warrants are oftentimes used for controlled delivery of drugs too. You know, and I suppose the point is, if we have probable cause to believe a guy is a dealer, then probably that's going to give you probable cause to search the whole house, isn't it? On the other hand, if he's what? Just a recreational user, maybe not. But of course, that's you have to decide based on the facts how broad a scope of the warrant you can authorize. It seems to me, and I've noticed that defense lawyers sometimes, they'll argue the probable cause issue, but they don't argue the scope issue that much. But I think you as magistrates ought to be worried about that. Just because you have probable cause to search this doesn't necessarily give you, what, probable cause to search that. Because you've got to be able to make that connection, it seems to me. Okay, so what about the Fourth Amendment? The Fourth Amendment provides no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. If there's no probable cause now, can I issue the warrant? The probable cause depends on a fair probability that evidence for contraband will be found. The probable cause for, and here's the point that Mr. Justice Scalia makes. He writes the majority opinion for Grubbs. He says, well, in one sense, all warrants are anticipatory, aren't they? Because they're based on a prediction that what? Something will be found at a particular location. So in that sense, he says, anticipatory warrants really aren't that much different than a regular warrant. At least that's his rationale. You're always deciding whether the item will still be there when the warrant is executed. And, sir, that gets into that staleness problem. That's why it's really important for you all to appreciate when the information was in fact communicated to the officer who is in fact making the affidavit for the warrant. Because the fact that there were drugs there a year ago isn't going to establish probable cause that there's drugs there now. Probably. Your job. Anticipatory warrants require the magistrate to determine that it is now probable that contraband, evidence of crime, or fugitive will be on the premises when the warrant is executed. In other words, there are two prerequisites to a probable cause determination for a conditioned anticipatory warrant. If the triggering condition occurs, there is a fair probability that contraband or evidence will be found in a particular place, and there's probable cause to believe the triggering condition will occur. Remember, that's the second thing. It's not only the triggering condition will establish probable cause, but there's probable cause that it's going to happen. Must the warrant specify the triggering condition? The United States Supreme Court said no, it doesn't have to, because the Fourth Amendment requires only that the search warrant particularly describe the place to be searched, the person or things to be seized. There is no requirement under the Fourth Amendment that you have some kind of explanation. Justice Scalia says we don't require inclusion of the triggering condition because the property owner doesn't have any right to a copy of the warrant before it's executed. And the Constitution protects property owners not by giving them a license to engage in a debate about whether the warrant should be issued or not. It either what? It either is established, it's either supported by probable cause or it isn't, and the police officer doesn't have to get into an argument with the homeowner as to whether they have the authority to search or not. Now, there were some of the judges, though, before the Supreme Court, that said, well, it would be a good idea that the triggering condition be included in the warrant. First of all, because the warrant might not be executed by the officer who obtained it. So the problem is, think about that. If the triggering condition isn't included, and the officer, what, executing the warrant didn't know about that, then what? We might have this police officer acting improperly. He thinks he's got the right to search, but he really doesn't because the triggering condition hasn't occurred. So that's why some of the justices said, well, you should have that triggering condition in there. He might be unaware of the need for a triggering condition. If the condition has not been met when executed, then the search is going to be what? Unreasonable. And stating the condition may give the owner the ability to correct the misapprehension that he or that the condition has been met. Now, so, under the Fourth Amendment, if I asked you the question, are anticipatory warrants proper under the Fourth Amendment? Yes, they are. But as you all know, something may be proper under the federal law, but we may have state law which reaches a different result. Article 1801 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure deals with the issue of issuing search warrants. In the Toon case, Toon versus State, a federal warrant was obtained, this is a Texas case, was obtained to search for child porn in anticipation of delivery of the porn to the defendant's house by a federal agent. Cocaine was found during execution of the search warrant, and the defendant was prosecuted for possession in the state court. As you all know, if you can get inside that house, that's what we want to do, because now the plain view doctrine comes into effect, and that's what we had happening here. Of course, the plain view doctrine won't authorize the search if the initial search was, in fact, in itself unlawful. Toon argued that 1801B prohibits anticipatory warrants. And 1801B says, no search warrant shall issue for any purpose in this state unless sufficient facts are first presented to satisfy the issuing magistrate that probable cause does in fact exist for its issuance. We're going to come back to this. Article 1801C prohibits anticipatory warrants. A search warrant may not be issued under Article 1802.10 unless the sworn affidavit sets forth sufficient facts to establish probable cause that the property or items constituting evidence to be searched for or seized are located at or on the particular person, place, or thing to be searched. What are 1802.10 warrants. Remember our categories of warrants, of things that you can search for. What's an Article 10? You all know. What are you seizing under 10? Not contraband, not instruments of crime, not fruits of crime, but what? Mere evidence. That's a mere evidence warrant under 18.02.10. How many attorneys are there in the room here? Are there judges here who can't issue mere evidence warrants? If you are what? You can't issue if you're what? Not a record judge, municipal court, not a record. You can't issue one of those. So 18.02.10 applies only to mere evidence warrants. Keep that in mind, because look at that highlighted language, are located. What does that suggest? That they're already there. Not, they're not going to be there in the future, but what? They're there right now. The Court of Appeals said there's no case law in Texas, but other state and federal courts allow them, so why not us? But in any event, the federal warrant is valid in federal court, so the cocaine may be used in Texas court proceedings. So the Texas exclusionary rule doesn't apply to what? The federal warrant. So the conviction was affirmed. I'm skipping this one. Now, dismissing the... Okay. Tune 2. The Court of Criminal Appeals is dealing with the issue. And here's what the Court of Criminal Appeals does. Article 3823A requires exclusion of evidence only if obtained in violation of what? The Constitution or laws of the U.S. or Texas. If the feds were acting properly, did they violate any law? No, they didn't violate any law. So the court says, only Article 1801 is alleged to be violated, and it only governs Texas search warrants, but this was a federal warrant, and therefore it isn't a search warrant under Article 1801. Consequently, the Texas exclusionary rule, Article 3823, doesn't apply because Article 1801 couldn't be violated by a federal warrant. So now the question is, the Court of Criminal Appeals hasn't decided it, is are anticipatory search warrants valid under Texas law? I'm going to skip this. We'll come back. Remember the language with evidentiary search warrants. What's the requirement if you're going to issue an evidentiary search warrant? You have to have what? An affidavit that evidence, specific evidence exists, and what? That it is now located at a particular location. Based on just looking at the language then, if I were to ask you, do you think an anticipatory mere evidence warrant in Texas is valid under Texas law, what would your answer be? Probably not. Now, other states that have considered the anticipatory search warrant have looked at their statutes. Some of you may know that Judge Cochran talks about interpreting statutes using what? Eighth grade grammar. Now, under the Code Construction Act in Texas, what are we to do when we interpret statutory language? We are to give it what? Its fair, ordinary meaning. And if you look at 1802.10, it says what? You got to have an affidavit that it was located at the time you applied for the warrant. So probably a mere evidence warrant or an anticipatory mere evidence warrant is not valid in Texas. Now, you all know, if you're a prosecutor or police officer, do you want to get a mere evidence warrant or are you going to get a warrant for something else? Why don't you want a mere evidence warrant if you have a chance to get a warrant for something else? But I'm thinking generally, though. Generally, why don't you want to use a mere evidence warrant if you got a basis for getting a warrant to search for something else. Remember, you can only search for what? The mere evidence. So that you're limited to the mere evidence in the warrant. But if you got a drug warrant, for example, could you seize mere evidence under the plain view doctrine? Yes, you could. So if you're a prosecutor, you're going to use a mere evidence warrant as a last resort. You would prefer to have what? A warrant for an instrument of the crime, a contraband, something under Category 1 through 9, not Category 10. And that's what I'm going to get to next, is, all right, let's go back here. Now, what if Texas police officers want to get a warrant to search for drugs? There's a controlled delivery of drugs. I want you to think about this. Look at 1801B. They've got a controlled delivery of drugs, and they know at some point, once those drugs are delivered and the resident takes them in the house, they're going to have what? Probable cause to search that house. Do you think under 1801 a warrant, an anticipatory warrant, would be justified for search of those drugs? I'm going to see a show of hands. I want you to think about that. Look at the language. Unless sufficient facts are first presented to satisfy the issuing magistrate that probable cause does in fact exist for its issuance. I want a show of hands here. Those who think in Texas such a warrant would be justified, or those who think wouldn't be. Okay, I want to ask first. You got a question first? The hypothetical? Okay, here's the deal. We're going to have a controlled delivery of drugs. So the search warrant is going to be for a search of drugs in ex-residence. So we're not talking about mere evidence now. We're talking about contraband. So contraband is going to be taken into the house, triggering condition, the delivery occurs. Now, my question then is, can a Texas magistrate, you think, issue legitimately an anticipatory search warrant for search of that residence for drugs? We ready to vote? I see a lot of heads going this way. No. We'll take the no's first. How many say no, we can't have that anticipatory search warrant? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How about a show of hands of those that think it would be okay? I think the okays have it. And there's some people who are undecided. Okay. They want to send it to another magistrate. Okay. Yeah. In other words, they have probable cause without the existence of the triggering condition. Because they already have probable cause that there's stuff in the house, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. And so in that case, you wouldn't need an anticipatory search warrant. You just get a regular search warrant, which is a way to get around. Of course, I still want to answer this question, though. You must be a lawyer because you're trying to figure out a way to avoid answering the question, right? Okay, yeah. Well, we taught you well then, didn't we, huh? Well, thank you. I didn't pay him to say that either. But I mentioned another magistrate. I used to tell judges, I say in these courses, said, don't be easy granting the warrant, because then they'll wake you up in the middle of the night So if they know you're tough on issuing the warrant, they're going to try to find somebody else. So you'll get more sleep, I suppose. But let me run this by you. Iowa and a couple of other states have held that anticipatory search warrants were invalid based on the wording of their statutes. So that's what we're talking about here. We're basically talking about the interpretation of Texas law. I want to hear from somebody who voted in favor of an anticipatory warrant in this situation. Yeah. And if I can follow up on that by saying this, are we asking whether the stuff does in fact exist, or are we asking whether probable cause does in fact exist? See, the people voting in favor of it say, okay, the issue is whether there's probable cause, not whether the stuff is there. And that's why I think the argument would be probable cause does in fact exist, not that what? That the stuff exists. I mean, that's the argument that you would make, yeah. Well, isn't the key here, when you're talking about asking what the law enforcement officer will do, the key is the occurrence of that event, isn't it? Isn't that the key, whether that event is going to occur or not? Yes, sir. I think, I mean, that's the argument. Of course, I think the bottom line here is that what distinguishes the anticipatory search warrant from the regular search warrant is you have to have that additional factor. You have to have probable cause that an event is going to occur. And when that event occurs, there will be probable cause then to believe that. Yes. Yes. Now, of course, we're not talking about arrest here, but presumably, the crime occurs in the presence of the officer, so they can probably arrest him without a warrant anyway. Once under Texas law, But I think, as going back to what I was saying earlier, I think the reason you want this warrant is so you can get in the house. I mean, that's what it seems to me, is because otherwise, why are we going through all this? I think it's to get into the house, which seems to me a little bit devious if you think about it. But that's why police officers like to arrest people in a house, right? Huh? You would prefer arresting them in a house than out on the street, because then we get search incident and all those other things that justify the search. Yes, sir. Let me read this to you. The gentleman's talking about a triggering condition. Let's say we want to search for marijuana, and here's a sample condition in a warrant. Once the confidential source sees the marijuana being displayed at the residence, he or she will give a prearranged signal that the marijuana has been seen. No search may occur unless and until the marijuana is successfully seen by the confidential source. I borrowed that from a North Carolina case. And I think probably the wise person would put that in the warrant to make sure that, okay, this warrant cannot properly be executed until that particular thing happens, of which you have probable cause to believe will happen. Now, of course, there are other comments. Now,
don't we get back to what Justice Scalia said? We don't have to put that language in.
Well, under the Fourth Amendment, you don't have to, but you all know, just because you don't have to doesn't necessarily mean it's not a good idea to do it. I think One of the, actually, there's an alternative to anticipatory search warrant that I think sometimes has been used is where you have one of the law enforcement team actually being in the magistrate's office. And then he's waiting for a call from the investigating team. And as soon as they call in, then he can relay that information to the magistrate and we can issue a warrant there. So then, in that sense, it's not an anticipatory warrant. It's now based on probable cause that the item is there right now. That's what I think has been used when people are concerned maybe about whether anticipatory search warrants are valid or not. Okay. Yes, sir. Of course, but in response to that, we've got a judge here who's worried about it because of what might be. Of course, the counter argument to that is, though, whenever you issue a search warrant, it's based on what might be, isn't it?
It's a little bit more concrete than that.
Well, but again, it's based on what? A probability, again, isn't it?
Well, it's a fair probability.
That's for you to decide. That's the judge says, what's a fair probability? Well, that's for you to decide. And obviously, you know, what's interesting about issuing search warrants, and to me it's so much fun. If you read Illinois versus Gates, for example, the Supreme Court says, we are going to defer, right? We're going to defer to the magistrate's judgment. We're not going to pass judgment on the magistrate's determination as long as what? There was a reasonable basis for the magistrate reaching that conclusion. We're not going to review it de novo, are we? So I guess the point here is, as a magistrate, you do have discretion. And if you don't like it, I mean, you don't have to issue it, you know? Because if you have, and I think there's some justification for that, too, because since this court has not yet decided, what? They haven't yet decided definitively whether they're valid or not, don't you have a legitimate basis for saying, I don't have to do it?
Let's just say we'll know Phil can get a lot of sleep at night. He won't be waking up.
Yeah, that's
right. Well, he... Okay. All right. Yeah, yes, sir.
An interesting point about probable cause. You're saying, don't we assume that it's always might going to happen?
Yeah.
But the reality is that an informant will probably get out that there was already blood in the place.
Yeah.
Or the officer will tell you, they saw some illegal activity.
But there's still probable cause to believe that it's still there. Yes. Well, it's okay. But we could argue the word might, I suppose. But what I'm saying is, I think we all can agree we are talking about probabilities here. It's whether it's probable that it will be there or not. Yeah. Yeah. That it's there in the first place, and it will be, and that gets into the staleness problem. If you see it on Thursday, then what? There's probable cause it's still going to be there, what? In Texas, it's going to be there in 5 days, right? Because we've got 5 days to issue that warrant.
But there's no anticipatory issue there.
Yeah.
You issue the warrant, they take
out. I saw another hand back here. Yes, sir. Of course, there's a problem with that, though, Judge. Remember that in Texas we have this four corners rule, and you don't issue a warrant based on anything other than what's in the affidavit. And if you're basing the issuance of the warrant on the fact that this officer has a good reputation, he doesn't lie, maybe that needs to be included in the affidavit. Okay, well, of course, presumably, we assume that any officer, if he swears to it, is telling the truth. I mean, I understand that, but I think you can't really make judgments. It seems to me, this is my opinion. You can't make judgments based on whether this officer lies or this officer lies when they're both willing to take the oath. But that's another issue altogether, but it seems to me if an officer is willing to take the oath, you have to what? You presume that he's telling you the truth.
What is your thought? What is your recommendation to us?
I think you can make a good argument that an anticipatory search warrant other than an anticipatory mere evidence warrant would be justified under the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure. But as I mentioned to the other judge, if I'm not your lawyer, okay? So I'm just stating my opinion, right? So you could very well conclude that because of the uncertainty, since we don't have a definitive statement, that I'm not going to do it. Now, one final question. Let's say you did issue one, and then later the court says anticipatory search warrants are invalid. Could we apply the good faith exception? No, we can't, because when you say they're invalid, what are you saying? There's no probable cause. And under the Texas good faith exception, there has to be probable cause for the good faith exception to apply. So I don't think the good faith exception would help you if the court ultimately holds that anticipatory search warrants are invalid, because the reason they're going to hold them invalid is there's no probable cause under Texas law. Well, I don't think so. That's right. We're not going to deal with it right now. We're talking about prediction today. I'm predicting also, and I'm saying that I think under the language, a good argument could be made that they are, in fact, valid. But you don't have to issue them, Judge.
No, but is there any doubt in your mind that Keesler, Keller, and Price, and all those folks down there, they're going to let it roll in?
Well, I think our judge here is assuming that we've got some, prosecution-oriented people down there on the Court of Criminal Appeals? Yeah, and that's true. That's true. And the smartest one of the bunch is prosecution-oriented, Judge Cochran is. So I think probably they would be upheld. And part of the reason is because the majority of states other than Texas that have considered this issue have, in fact, upheld the warrants. The only ones that have found specific language that talks in the present tense as making them not proper. Okay? I'm out of time, right? Thanks, Gary. Thank you all. You're a good group.